The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you? Further stories and speculations have been appearing about the drone event that took place in Beirut over the weekend. This is looking stranger and stranger. What more has now been revealed about this incident?
Well, I don't usually like to talk about the same thing 2 days in a row because there's so much to talk about in our part of the world that it sounds like we're kind of just going over old ground. But this is really kind of fascinating. And I think that some of the listeners would be interested to hear some of the new things that have been written. Of course, none of it has been validated. So it's all in the form of speculation. But some of the speculation sounds really kind of educated. It sounds like it could really be true. So I wanted to just share some of the things that I've been reading about this. You know, we heard that there was this drone incident that surrounded the Hezbollah communications office in the central part of Beirut, or in that southern part of Beirut where the Hezbollah stronghold is. Two drones, both of them apparently with explosives on board. Now we're being told that there are the types of drones that need to have an operator relatively nearby in order to control them. So kind of, our thoughts go towards, well, who are the operators? Where are the operators? Let's think about that. That's an interesting story in and of itself. But apparently these two drones were each carrying 5.5 kilograms of an explosive called C4 and were on a so-called suicide mission and not necessarily a reconnaissance or intelligence gathering mission. There was, of course, all of the fingers now are being pointed towards Israel, even though at one stage there was this kind of red herring that was being thrown in that suggested that at least some of the drone parts had originated in Iran. Maybe that's true, by the way. Maybe it could well be that, you know, in order to try to confuse things, that there were some Iranian parts thrown into this drone, but that hasn't been confirmed at all. It seems as if the one drone was brought down by people who were actually throwing rocks at it from the ground or from somewhere nearby, and they managed to bring it down and it crashed while the other one actually exploded. But here's the interesting thing. There is now talk about the fact that this all took place nearby a storage facility which contained some high-end industrial mixer and some solid fuel propellants that were needed to be mixed in order to create high-grade precision missiles. And therein lies the whole thing. There was this whole story that I read about two trucks being in the area, one containing this high-grade propellant, another truck containing equipment, computerized equipment of some sort. Both trucks apparently were up in flames and were completely destroyed by the event, by the drones. We know that Israel is hugely sensitive to the possibility that Hezbollah can turn its huge arsenal of rockets that it has into these high-grade precision missiles. So whereas today the rockets are mostly quite small and man-portable surface-to-surface rockets and missiles with ranges of between 10 and 500 kilometers, we also know that there is some sort of a plan and an intention to convert these into much smarter missiles that can be deployed much more accurately. And we understand that Israel has really been on the track of all of the developments that have been going on within Hezbollah to turn these missiles into these precision missiles and has been doing whatever it can in order to prevent Hezbollah from that breakthrough of turning their existing arsenal of rockets into these precision guided missiles. But it is believed that or Israeli officials have said that Hezbollah is likely to have something like 1,000 precision-guided missiles within the next 10 years. And, of course, this is something that the IDF and the Israeli government are trying to avoid and prevent at all costs. So, you know, there is certainly a believable story that surrounds all of this. But who knows whether it's true or not, you know, it kind of sounds like something from out of the movies, and maybe there will be a movie made about it, who knows, but it certainly sounds like there is a lot more to this particular incident than is being made public, even though, you know, there is obviously a lot of public interest that's been drawn from some of the stories that have been published in the public area. Who knows how true they are? Who knows?
But do we have a sense if this mission, in inverted commas, if that's what it is, was successful or not?
Well, it seems as if both of these trucks were destroyed. And so if that was the intention, then it seems as if the operation was successful. But there is also talk about this nearby storage facility, and it's not clear whether that was destroyed or not, and whether that potentially might have also been one of the targets. So it's not clear, but it seems as if, though, at least part of the intentions were carried out, and so therefore it was at least partially successful, maybe more than that, I don't know.
Right. Absolutely fascinating. Mortar rounds were fired from Gaza towards Israel yesterday. Where are we with this escalation between Israel and Gaza?
Probably in the middle somewhere. Who knows? You know,
I guess.
When your story never ends, it's always in the middle.
Yep.
Exactly. We're always kind of in the middle somewhere. There were four mortars that were fired from the Gaza Strip towards southern Israel. We know that mortars were the real weakness during Operation Protective Edge, where Israel didn't seem to have a response against mortar fire. This is very, very, very short range fire that just literally plops over the border and can cause untold damage. And in fact, groups of soldiers who were gathered on the Gaza border during Operation Protective Edge were the targets of these very, very short-range mortars that were being fired from Gaza. And in fact, some of them were quite successful and created a lot of damage. And we understand that Israel has been working very hard in order to develop some sort of an anti-mortar system, which involves, I don't know, a laser beam of some sort that will allow the IDF to pick up, detect, and destroy the mortar in that very, very minuscule period of time just before it drops over the border and explodes. But on this occasion, out of the four mortars that were fired, three actually didn't even make it across the Gaza border, landed inside Gaza. The fourth one fell in open territory in Israel, quite near the border fence. Fortunately, it was an open territory. No damage, no injuries were caused, and that's good news. And of course, the IDF, as always, as is its stated policy, decided to take revenge and did attack a number of different targets within the Gaza Strip. Very, very limited. But I think the interesting story is the fact that there were two explosions in Gaza, two separate explosions overnight. There were three people who have been identified as police officers who were killed. One apparently was an event where two people were riding a motorcycle and suddenly there was an explosion and these two people were killed. Fingers are being pointed at Israel, saying that this is the kind of thing that Israel would usually do in carrying out these a very targeted personal attacks, which Israel has been known to carry out in the past. The IDF was very, very quick to deny the fact that they were involved at all in the killing of these three individuals. So the question is, if it wasn't Israel, then who could it have been? And I guess that this goes some way to show exactly what sort of chaos is going on in Gaza between the various factions, the various renegade groups that are operating there. Some of them obviously operating against Hamas itself. Some people are suggesting that this might have been a group that has certain affiliations with ISIS, the late ISIS. I don't know if ISIS really exists anymore, but certainly there are some people who are still around who have sympathies with the ISIS way of thinking. This seems to have been the case. But the fact that the Israeli government, the IDF, was so quick to deny any involvement in these attacks, it does lead me to think that they probably weren't involved, because we've seen in recent days and months, weeks and months, that the IDF has been prepared to take responsibility and has publicly stated involvement in some of the things that we would, you know, would be the last things that we would normally have expected to hear the IDF acknowledging their involvement in. So I suspect that if these people were attacked in a targeted way by the IDF, then the IDF would have said so. And the follow on from that is that nonetheless, even though the IDF are denying any involvement at all, there is certainly a feeling that there's going to be a response from Gaza of some sort towards Israel in order to revenge this, even if Israel might not have been involved. So obviously there is a lot of caution, not only on the northern border with the things that have been happening there, but also along the Gaza Strip, for fear that there may well be some retaliation in the offing quite soon. So once again, we'll have to just wait and see how all of that pans out.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. We don't have a lot of time, but just tell us very quickly what the issue is around filming in the voting booths.
Well, the latest election story really revolves around cameras at polling stations and the fact that the Likud in the last election was accused of actually having placed secret cameras at certain polling stations, particularly ones within the Arab areas. And these, of course, were illegal. And in fact, the Central Election Committee has had an appeal to it, has had an application to formally approve the placement of cameras at election stations. And Hanan Meltzer is the chairman of the Central Election Committee, has particularly said that he will not approve that. And that, in fact, he feels it's even beyond his authority and that legislation would be required in order to allow cameras to be placed at polling stations. And, of course, this has kicked the Likud into action, saying perhaps we could get the Knesset together and make a new law even before the election, put through a new law through the Knesset, which allows cameras at polling stations. And this is really all about some of the illegal activity that goes on in polling stations where people have, there have been cases of identity theft, people claiming to be having identities of dead people and coming to vote on their behalf. And there have been accusations that this happens more in the Arab sector and more in the Haredi sector than any other sector in Israel. I have no idea how that information has been produced and who has said it, but that's certainly the accusations that are going on publicly. But I'm just going to end by leaving, you know, with a question, which is, do cameras in polling stations affect our democracy? Is that what we want? I mean, I'm not suggesting that the cameras are going to be behind the little screen where people do their private voting, but certainly cameras in polling stations to see who comes and goes and to see what goes on there. Is that something which is okay in a democratic environment? Do we want to see that? I'm not sure. That's a question that I have to answer for myself, and perhaps the listeners out there can also participate and let us have their views.
Interesting. We're going to talk about that after 8. I know Howard Sachs seems to be very involved in assisting and writing voting protocol. So I'm interested to hear his thoughts on that as well, of course, from our listeners, 34519 or 0618951019. Do you think that having cameras in voting stations, obviously not the details and not seeing what you're actually doing, but does it impact negatively on your democratic right? Very interesting conversation. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. News slightly late, 8:01.